Sorry about that. Yes, I should pick you up on a couple of the themes from the other guys. What we've been doing inside the BBC is introducing this stuff in a very initially low-key, small-scale way, and letting it grow at its own sort of speed. Consciously avoiding pitching it at a corporate level, consciously avoiding marketing it internally, being very aware of the fact that people have to trust this sort of stuff if they're going to use it, they have to feel comfortable with the environment, if they're going to open up and share things. So I'm going to show you three different tools that we've implemented over the last couple of years. First of which, on the screen now, is a bulletin board that we implemented 2 years ago. We're about to replace it with a tool that's costing us the vast sum of £250 sterling for 25,000 people. So this sort of stuff doesn't need to cost a lot of money. And we started using it, we spread it by word of mouth, people began to get interested in it, began to use it for things we hadn't anticipated them using it for. And it's now our second most visited internal website. It gets about 8,000 individual PCs connected to it in any particular month. So that's almost half of our staff. We've given the normal demographics of organisations where you've got people who are not comfortable with computers or different age ranges or whatever. It's a significant chunk of our population. And it gets used for all sorts of things. Primarily, the basic one of asking questions and getting answers. You know, to 25,000 people, somebody will have done whatever it is you're trying to do, or will there somebody else who has. So we get lots of mundane, practical stuff. How do I do X, Y, and Z? How do I find stuff? Every question gets asked with answered normally within about half an hour. We also get non-work-related subjects coming up all the time. And I think this is a big issue in corporate environments, where we've been trained, if you like, that being business-like means not talking about the stuff of being human, the sort of messy personal stuff. A while back we had a thread in our bulletin board about being single, about the pros and cons of being single, which was giving even me a cause for concern because it was basically turning into a dating agency and they were all trying to get on with each other. But two things occurred to me. Firstly, there's nothing new in that. I met my wife in the business I work in. We've always socialised in a work environment. I'm also in a slightly different business, but it's the sort of stuff we make programmes about, are the messy things of life. So after a couple of days of this thread, one of our producers popped up and said, "This is wonderful, I'm about to make a programme about being single. You guys have done half my work for me." But I think even in other less media businesses, you know, people are people, they buy products, they have opinions, they talk about stuff that isn't in the neatly regulated lines of business. So I think having a tolerance in these types of environments for that socialising that's required if you're going to become trusting of each other is really significant. We occasionally get surprises because knowledge is power, the old adage, and in my business, programme ideas are gold dust. That's the sort of stuff you normally keep close to your chest until you've got the commission and you can rest easy. This guy, 6 months or so ago, put this post in, which is a programme idea that they've worked through in reasonable detail, half a dozen paragraphs, in a very open environment. They've just basically opened up and said, "This is my idea." The first thing that starts to happen is they get feedback, they get positive reinforcement, they get people saying, "Yes, that's a good idea, I would listen to a radio programme like that." They get people refining their idea and adding some suggestions to it. Basically, they get a bunch of resource coming to them from having been open. And it's the inverse of the old usual adage about knowledge being power. In these environments, if you're not giving knowledge out, if you're not seen to know stuff, and if you're not prepared to share stuff, then you're not visible. And what we're finding in this tool is that we've got people who previously had no presence in the organisation, they might have been geographically remote, or in low jobs where they weren't necessarily gaining high profile conventionally, are becoming really key people through these types of tools. They've got a voice, they've got opinions, they know things, which are becoming useful to other people. So it's starting to change some of the power games that take place in organisations in interesting ways. We also have blogs. We introduced this about a year ago, I guess. And we've got, I think it's about 70 blogs with maybe 150 people writing. Some of them are team blogs. Some of them are project teams sharing links and contextual links with each other. Some of them are departments using them as a very low-cost way of replacing the conventional internal comms style newsletter. You know, in the past we've had hundreds of webmasters who've been paid to put content up, having to have applications or be geeky enough to write HTML. Blogs give internal departments the ability to produce content and publish it just like it does outside. But we also get some individuals writing blogs. And this one, it's a guy called Richard Sandbrook, who's in the news during the Gilligan affair, so you might have heard his name. But he's actually currently head of Global News and World Service, so one of the execs in the business. And he's chosen to have this internal weblog, as opposed to having conventional means of communicating with his staff. As he put it to me, he got fed up with people not knowing what he does all day. Now, Richard's obviously, given that he's a journalist and he's part of the journalism activity, the BBC is very aware of the impact that blogs are having outside work, partly why you're involved in it. But by having this internal blog, he's gaining, again, a presence and a voice that normally our chief executive don't have. They're distant from us. They can communicate through internal comms channels. And Richard is publishing two or three times a day, usually. Being very brave, he's talking about real stuff in his own voice. It's very authentic. He's conscious that although this is an internal weblog, it's effectively external, because anything he says is copy and paste away from the outside world. So it's raising all sorts of interesting issues within the business, how his presence as an individual is increasing, obviously with comments as well, people in his team, people in his department are able to come back, they're able to query things. So it's shifting that internal balance, very much in parallel to the way it's affecting the outside world, where corporates and big businesses are pumping stuff at people. With blogs, they're having a voice back. The last tool to show you, we've implemented wikis. I'm embarrassed to be on the same stage as Ross and not to have used social tech. But we've had this for about 6 months now, I guess. And it's grown even faster than the blogs, for possibly interesting reasons. We now have about 400 people registered using our wiki service. Again, for different sorts of uses. Some, again, are just individuals using it for their own purposes. But mostly, it's people who are having to produce collaboratively written documents, people who are involved in writing procedures, manuals, anything sort of semi-formal that you have to produce in a business. But I think we've all got frustrated with the old Word documents that get buried in a file server, and nobody can tell who's updated it, all that sort of stuff. With wikis, it's live, it's visible, and everyone can contribute to it. This particular example is we have a leadership program which we run in the BBC, and we've tried for 2 years to get a website going, but nobody showed enough interest to begin to write or publish a website. Within 2 days of having the leadership wiki up there, we had punters starting to contribute content, writing their own stories, sharing their own experiences of the challenges of being a leader in the business. To contrast three different tools, lastly, the bulletin board is very noisy. It's chatty, it's robust. If you stick your neck up there, you're likely to get it shot off. And it's not for everyone. Some people find it quite intimidating. The blogs are more measured, they're more personal, they're more controlled. It's your space and you're saying what you want to say in them. And the wikis seem to be appealing to more formal work. People feel more comfortable being engaged in a business process and a business-like tool than some of them are with keeping blogs. So that's just some examples of how we're using the technology.
I've got one question
from the chat channel, which is, are leaks from internal blogs and wikis an issue? If so, are those risks, how are those risks managed? And
we've only had one example of where an internal, one of the bulletin board posts leaked out onto the media. But to be frank, it's nothing new for us. We've always leaked like a sieve. If a journalist is disgruntled, he will phone his mate in private eye and it's all over the press the next day. Now, yes, it can happen more quickly and it's easier to do, but we have legislation, we have rules, and we have conditions of service that govern this sort of stuff. What's possibly more interesting, and I've kicked off some work recently inside the BBC about this, is what I, as a personal blogger, can or can't say about my work on my external blog. And what I do, I don't feel comfortable with saying. And we're trying to get some ground rules down before somebody gets it wrong and gets their arse kicked.
Also, some of the advice we ended up giving is just think of it as email. You've dealt with all these issues for years already, right? Your employees can leak a memo by email outside the company. And I mean, just turn to the build off of the policies that are already in place. Take advantage of the new opportunity for a different dialogue with all of your employees about what's appropriate and what's not. Build a new policy that reflects some, that's more about fixing misunderstandings about the empowerment blogs can give you. Might be one of them. A question again from Ewan, real quick. What other tools would you want or have to integrate? This is from Jeff Flavia.
Okay, the next step for us is getting an RSS aggregator going. We've got a number of them we're using within the business. But it's all the geeks who can get the hair drivers at the moment. What we wanted is something really simple that everyone can get, possibly plugging into Outlook, so that it just becomes a very easy way for people to get into this content. The other thing we've just started mucking about is a thing called Delirious, which has been based on Delicious, because we toyed with the idea of using Delicious to store our corporate bookmarks. But interestingly enough, although tags are the content, patterns on tags become like content, and to have those outside the firewall would raise issues for us. So we're beginning to develop that sort of linkiness, being able to find the good stuff within the organisation. The last thing I'm looking at, and it's really pretty contentious, so I'm not going to implement it for a while, is some idea of a reputation engine. Who's reading who rates who are the people who've got the most blog juice within the organisation? It's going to get really powerful, but for that reason, potentially contentious.